difference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, should we care about history? Does it matter? It's all in the past. We can't change it anyway. Does it really matter? I don't know. Here to talk a little bit about it, I've asked our good friend Keith Pocheck to come talk with a contributing editor over at Patriot Not Partisan. Keith, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back, Rick. I must have done okay last time.
You're always great. Let me ask you this. Did you see the big Kimmel West dust up last night?
No, I did not. I did not see that one, but I did. I have heard some of Kanye's comments, regarding Trump and all of his dragon energy. But I didn't see the Jimmy Kimmel Kanye spat at all.
Yeah, it was weird because he was basically saying, history doesn't matter. We shouldn't even have history class anymore. We should have future class, Keith. I don't know what the hell that would look like, but we should have it.
If we could predict that, boy, we would we'd all have it great, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we'd all win the lottery and we'd all get our buck back.
Exactly. Oh, no, history is there are so many lessons there, and I think we have a tendency, I think we fall into different camps. There are some of us who want to examine and highlight and revere only our proud moments, which we have plenty in America. Just some of the things that we've done,
sure,
with throughout the course of our history and our accomplishments. But every part of our history of which I am proud is a part of our history wherein our leaders were progressive. You could go through just centuries of that versus. We have a camp of people who always want to remind us of the horrible things about our country, and we need to know about those. We have to be able to look at the inspiring and fantastic moments of our history, as well as the shameful moments of our history, through the same lens, because we can learn just as much from both. And I think that there are so many lessons there. Not just in American history, but obviously in world history. And I, became more of an amateur American history student probably while I was in medical school. I think I concentrated so much on science and studying to become a doctor that I neglected another segment of my potential education, and I had to kind of play catch up with literature and history. But American history has fascinated me for at least 10 or 15 years now. Yeah. And there's just, there are so many things that we can learn and glean on how to move forward that's already written down for us.
No, you're absolutely right. And, as you were going through that, I thought of, the JFK speech on why I'm a liberal. And, as the quote goes, if by liberal, they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reaction, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, and their civil liberties, someone who believes we can break through the stalemate and the suspicion that grip us in our policies abroad. If that's what they mean by liberal, then I am proud to say I'm a liberal, and I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think wear that as a badge of honor, liberal or progressive. I mean, that means you stand for human rights, and you stand for women's rights, and you stand for workers' rights. And, you look at moments of our history where we really forwarded those causes as a touchstone, for how we're going to, govern and what our goals are moving forward. So it's vitally important to be able to look back upon those moments, but then also, to be able to say, "Wow, look at what barbarians we were," with some of our other moments throughout history. And the article that I sent you that we referenced, had this beautiful quote from Jefferson, and he even acknowledged in that quote that the last sentence of it says, "We might as well require a man to wear still the coat which fitted him when a boy, as a civilized society, to remain ever under the regimen of their barbarous ancestors." And so he kind of was foreshadowing and saying there that, hey, probably future generations are going to look back at some of the things we did and say, these people were barbarians.
Yep.
And so he was acknowledging that, you know, that he was a fallible person. And I think, you know, a lot of learning about ourselves and shaping future generations is to acknowledge that. And so that's how I think, you know, we root a strong progressive movement. You know, we have to be able to not just look back on proud moments and celebrate them, but we also have to be able to realize the moments in our history where, you know, we're not very proud of those either.
Right, and to move forward on them. And one of the things that, you know, I think one of the main dividing points with us as a country right now is I have friends who believe that we should read the Constitution only as it's written, and there should never be any deviations because we're original intentists who believe that nothing can ever change. And then there are folks like us who I believe, or I'll speak for myself, I believe it's a living, breathing document. It changes with times, as you pointed out. You know, it's not the same coat you were going to wear as an adult that you wore as a kid. Things do change. Things do move forward. And I think, as Jefferson said, I don't want, you know, change just for change's sake or wild change. But you have to be cognizant of the fact that things will change.
Oh, I mean, and that's what, you know, one of the central tenets of the Constitution itself. You know, someone will say they're a constitutional originalist, but you can't say that and not acknowledge that the means was written into the very document of how to change and amend it. So, you know, to be a constitutional originalist, I think, is to realize that the people have been granted this immense power to change their government as they see fit. And so that's, in my mind, that's still a constitutional originalist. That's looking to see, you know, how has this document changed or amended? And, you know, we can make and change laws as we see them fit. So that's still an originalist interpretation of the Constitution. At least in my book, it is.
Yeah. But at the end of it, you know, what I get from people generally when I hear the original intent argument, it's, well, we really want to make blacks 3/5 of a person again, and we want women completely ignored. I mean, that could be wrong, but that has been my experience.
I think that's probably an undercurrent of it. I really think it is. You know, you'll have people who will tell you, well, you know, this document was written and this country was founded on the basis that white landowning males were the people who were supposed to have a vote and have
over
a voice.
21.
And you know, and so, you know, you're certainly going to hear that argument, but I think you look back at the document itself and what the founders actually thought about how government can be, you know, changed and how it can evolve based on what the popular will is, and they fully acknowledge that. So, you know, for someone to say that this document is rigid and shouldn't be, you know, addended or otherwise interpreted, I think is a little obtuse.
No, I mean, at the end of it, to me, I just, you go back and you learn from those moments in history, and you promise not to make those mistakes again. But what do you say to the people who then go, you know what, all of those accomplishments because of the sins, because of the sins of the past, all of those accomplishments should be washed away. And, you know, we tarnish and we tar and feather those who during that era, you know, Jefferson, for instance, is an example, who owned slaves. I believe on his death, he set them free. Or I think it was Washington as well. I think Jefferson treated them better than Washington, as I remember the history. But, you know, what do you say to the person who says, you know what, they own slaves. We shouldn't take anything they have to say give them any credit whatsoever.
I mean, I think the first thing to do, I think, is to realize and recognize, you know, where that comment comes from and the emotion behind it. And, you know, it's easy for me, I think, and you as well, as a white male to, you know, like I said, to really just embrace this baby and, you know, tell people why we love this country and why it's the greatest country. And it's a little easier for us. And I think it takes a different measure of grace for women or for minorities or for, you know, the LGBT community, Muslims, you know, Hispanics, what have you, to have that same kind of reverence for our country. So we have to understand, I think, why that sentiment exists and realize that, hey, you know, maybe there's some validity to it. I understand, you know, that's a painful moment for you personally to look back on that I can't completely understand. But then I also think that to look at events and people from hundreds of years ago and then to judge them using today's just sort of standards and moral codes is also just off base. I mean, right. I think we have to realize that none of us can say that 250, 300 years ago that we would have opposed anything that was going on more furiously than anyone else who was living at the time. I think, you know, you can look at what some of the progressives at the time were doing and saying and writing, and you can read Frederick Douglass and just realize how, you know, what an eye-opener his story was for people back then, and you see why the progressive movement and the fact that it's so just entwined with the human cause and human rights and how that can change people's minds and opinions. And we have to be able to embrace that as well.
But I thought Frederick Douglass was just doing some great work just a year or two ago.
That's true. And I think he was on Twitter up until just a couple years ago. So maybe we could find him then. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he was at the Bowling Green Massacre and we just didn't know about it.
He could have been.
No, I don't want to make light of that, but you know, you're right. I mean, the majority of us, we're looking at those events through knowledgeable eyes of today, and you have no idea what you'd have done 100 or 200 years ago. I'd like to think I'd have been on the right side of history, but none of us can say for certain.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's social change and policy change. A lot of times, unfortunately, it takes generations, and so, you know, we have to be able to constantly build upon what some of the visionaries before us have laid down. And I think that's the baby. You know, we talk about this baby in the bathwater sentiment that I brought up in the piece, and the baby that was left for us is that we have this government and this model laid out for us that's not a totalitarian model. It was founded in direct opposition to that, and it empowered people to be able to tailor the government to fit themselves, and so that's the baby, that's the nugget that we have to realize we all have now as Americans, and not all Americans had that in 250 years ago, but now, you know, even if you were a member of a persecuted group now who didn't have those rights back then, this is your baby now, and so you get a voice, and I want people to know that their voice, you know, it matters just as much as mine does as a white male, and I think that's it starts with being able to try and stop and listen and see where some of the sentiment comes from, but then to also, you know, explain that this is now, that this is different now, and so this is everyone's country.
I mean, we're supposedly all equal. We're supposed to all have the ability to pursue life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. We're supposed to anyway. We're all supposed to be, you know, in the eyes of the law, we're all supposed to be, you know, one and the same.
And we're not there yet. You know, it's obviously. So we definitely have a long way to go. But I think, using the same analogy, it's not. I don't think that's cause to, you know, toss out the baby. I mean, I think that, you know, we keep washing it. We keep, you know, fitting our government to what the needs of our people are. And, you know, you talked a lot with Scott Dworkin about just some of the, you know, corporate corruption that's going on in government right now. And I think about how, or at least I imagine, that the founding fathers would just be aghast at the level of corruption that's you know, has worked its way into our government, particularly over the last 20 years or so.
No, they'd be writing the Declaration of Independence Part 2.
No, absolutely. I mean, you think, you know, you guys mentioned, you and Scott mentioned Chris Collins, and, you know, and even if you leave the insider trading segment of that alone, just forget that for a second. Here you have a guy who's a Congress member who is on the board of an Australian biotech company while he is sitting on the House, on the Congressional Health Committee. So the Health Committee, and he's has a deciding vote on the board of an Australian biotech company. And,
yeah.
And we can't, I mean, and that's the level,
and he's
of
buying
conflicts.
Stock.
Yeah, and the conflicts of interest that are right there in plain sight, and they're not really even any, there's no shame. That's even there. Of course, there's going to be insider trading when things like that are going on. And it sort of begged the question for me, which one came first? Was he you know, sitting on the biotech company's board, or was he a member of the health committee there for Congress? And I don't know which one would be more infuriating, to be honest.
But again, I go back to, you know, right at the beginning of the administration, where they wanted to do away with the oversight committee. They wanted to do away with the Office of Ethics. And, you know, I said right from the beginning, this is a telltale sign of all the graft and corruption that we know is coming, because Trump is that kind of a character. We know this is going to be the most kleptocratic administration in the history of the country. Ulysses S. Grant is smiling in his grave as we speak, because he's no longer the most corrupt administration in history. Reagan has got to be, you know, happy, because what, the 100 or some that were indicted under his administration are going to be dwarfed by the time we're done with this one.
Yeah, that looks like that record's going to fall here pretty soon, it seems, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Trump's right. He's going to be the most memorable administration in history. We'll be the first one to side with a foreign adversary over we the people. Going to have the most people indicted, the most corrupt. It's going to be history will remember him. Not well, but they'll remember him.
Oh, right. You know, and you see a scandal, you know, which occurs with, say, the NRA getting Russian money funneled in, and then, you know, the next day, the administration is trying to push legislation and change laws about, you know, transparency about where donation money is coming from. I mean, it's obvious and just happens right in front of your face. And, you know, there's no shame. And I think, nope. There's no accountability and there's no shame. And so I guess, you know, all we have now is November and, you know, to make them accountable.
And absolutely. I'm hoping for the parade, I'm willing to pay for, because we're going to spend, I got what, about $12 million on this military parade for Trump's ego. I would be happy to kick in some money for the parade of perp walks into the jail cells. I think that would be the best parade we could possibly have. Start off with Manafort right there, Mike Flynn, Papadopoulos. We can get all of them. All of them right in a nice long line, and I'd be willing to fund that parade.
You got to have we got to get Adam Parkamenko on board for organizing that.
There you go.
That's the all-star for protests and parades. I think, you know, it would be fun if he were in charge.
No, he's doing fantastic work in D.C. with the Kremlin annex. You know, it's amazing. And look, it's the kind of stuff that, you know, it's fun, and I think it's entertaining. But more importantly, it's bringing people the amount of awareness of how corrupt this administration really is.
Absolutely. I mean, I think look back. You know, we maybe are around the same age. I don't know how old you are, but think 20, 30 years ago, the GOP, their base and their particularly their business base and their wealthy donors, they were laissez-faire capitalists. You know, it's a, hey, stay out of government, can stay out of my business. Leave me alone. Don't regulate me. I'll thrive and survive and I'll do well. And what that's morphed into now is, Not only do they welcome, it's not government interference, it's that now the GOP donors and corporations are now actually, they are the government.
And they're the welfare.
They're writing the laws. They're writing their own laws. And so look at how that's morphed over 20 or 30 years, that ideology.
No, we've socialized Wall Street risk, and we've capitalized social programs. To where, you know what, you poor people, sorry, screw you, you lost. And you're right. There used to be a word for that, though, when government and corporations are, when corporations are kind of taking over government. There used to be a word. It began with an F. Fascism. There used to be a word for that.
Well, I didn't know if I was going to go that far or not. I was going to say corporatocracy. But absolutely.
Well, if you weren't going to go there, I'll take you there, because that's it's what it appears every day. We appear to be more and more down that path as corporate interests outweigh the interests of we the people. So last question I've got for you. Any hope? I mean, you know, because we've kind of talked a lot of doom and gloom. You got Kanye saying we don't need to learn about history. You got a bunch of people who are glorifying ignorance of the past. Any hope for the future?
I think so. I mean, I think our energy is very high. I think we definitely, if we keep riding this, that we can take back the House and take back Congress. And I think that's where it starts. And so you know, the next push, I think, on the Democratic agenda or strategy, and obviously Scott Dworkin knows a lot more about this than I do, but I think once all of our primaries finish, and I think that's coming soon, it's going to have to be a message of just, you know, absolute unity. You get in there and you just punch that straight Democratic ticket, because right now that's the only hope. I mean, I think it's a strong hope. There's reason to hope, but I think that's our answer. I mean, you just look at what is happening with the Republican-controlled government right now, and our slide into authoritarianism. And
yeah, we need the checks and balances.
Yeah, and just realizing that's completely the opposite of what our country was founded on. That's the, you know, that's the baby, is that, you know, we are empowered as citizens to be able to choose and have a say in the type of government that we're going to live under.
Well, good stuff. I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work that you do. Keep it up. I'd love to have you back again real soon.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll be back anytime.
Good stuff. You're fun, Keith. I appreciate the time. If you want to take a look at Keith's article, we'll make sure we get a link out so folks can take a look at it. Or you can check him out at patriotnotpartisan.com. He does some fantastic work. Keith Pocheck, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Like it is.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.